CKUT 90.3 FM.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Magandang hapon, nakikinig po kayo sa Radio Kapwa, where all Filipinos are Filipino enough. You're listening to 90.3 CKUT FM. Good afternoon, bonjour, mabuhay everybody, and welcome back to Radio Kapwa, your weekly radio station bringing you Filipino community, culture, and love. So I'm here. My name is Desiree Ruiz, and I'm here with my co-host Vero and Laura, our sound engineer. And we love to start off some shows with an icebreaker, just for you to, for us to get to know each other, and for you to get to know us. So today's icebreaker is: what was your favorite game growing up? What was your favorite game to play growing up? And I will start. My favorite game growing up, so just some context, I grew up in the South Shore in Brossard, and I had, you know, lots of Filipinos on my street, and there wasn't much. My parents worked a lot, or my mom worked a lot. My dad loved to watch movies. There wasn't a lot of, I would say, connection. And I'm not saying that in a negative way, but I just love to be with other people. Like, I love to be around other people. So I used to wake up in the summers and wait, like, just stare out the window and wait for other kids to come outside. And my favorite game that we used to play, and there was a lot of kids all around the same age, and my favorite game to play was war. And what was war? It sounds like very aggressive now that I say it out loud, but essentially it was like, we were like, it's tag, you know what I mean? And like tag, and there was an aspect of hiding, but I just loved it because I felt so connected to the kids on my street. And so looking back now, there was like the strong need for connection and any game where it was like a group game. And as an individual now, as an adult, I always prefer to do things in groups versus doing things alone. Not because I can't do things alone. I just always prefer to do things with other people. And it, like, this prompt just made me realize just how far back that goes. And essentially it's like this love and needing for connection, or more connection in my life. So that was my game, war. Vero, what was your game you liked to play growing up?
Yeah, Veronica speaking. I was born in the Philippines, and I lived in a subdivision where there's a lot of children. There's just a lot of people in the Philippines, generally speaking. But like, I now that I'm looking at it in my adult life, I'm 27. I just realized that I did have such a colorful childhood. Like, I was just like you, Des. I don't even look at the window. I just go out. And I know that there's going to be kids around, and we just play. And so if in terms of one specific games, I don't know. But we have just the same thing, like your game war, where like you do taya, 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 taya. And you say, so taya means like you're it. You know, you touch the person and you're it. And we make our own rules, right? Oh, you can't go this, you can't go that, you can't go that. And then there's also that aspect of hiding.
Yeah. Us too, it sounds like my game.
It was really, really fun because, you know, I would play with like the older ates or the older kuyas, or like the younger ones. So when the younger ones are coming in, like, you gotta go watch out for them. Don't go there, don't go this, you know. So I had a very rich and like I would like to say like Filipino childhood upbringing, where we even like played a tumbang preso, which it sounds kind of weird, not tumbang preso.
what is that?
It's like a can. So it's like an empty can, let's say like empty can of like sirop d'érable, like that's empty. And you have your chinelas, you have like your slippers, and then you put it in the middle of the road, and there's like a certain like line, and everyone is lined up. And then you're going to have to, you know how like you're throwing stones, you're skipping stones. You have a chinelas and you throw it to that can that you put in the middle of the road. And then you have like two chinelas, so a pair of chinelas. And then after that, like once the can toppled over because you hit it, you can now grab your chinelas. But the thing is, there's one person guarding it, right? And so that person is, once the can fall down, that person's guarding it will do tayo to everyone who's going to grab their chinelas. And then it's just like round two, you know, like again. So it was like, it was great because some people who's like not physically active, they join because like they didn't need to run. They only run once, like once the can falls off, right? And if no one was able to hit the can, then it just like everyone just comes back and get their chinelas and then do the another round. So that was a tumbang preso. And it's like tumba, like tombe, right? So when it falls down, the can falls down, like you gotta go grab your weapon to hit it back again. So that was
I love the simplicity in the games, right?
Yeah.
Right? The simplicity. No electronics and you're playing with a chinelas and a can. I love that.
Yeah.
Or tag.
And then the parents are just there like, this is nice because the children are just in one spot. So they can just go look at the window and just like, okay, so they're still there. And then all you hear after like 4 p.m., they'll be like, oi, merienda na! And, you know, and like parents started like, either you come back home to like get fresh water, or parents started bringing in their newspapers. They put it at the back of your at your back because you're sweating so much because it's tropical, and so they put like newspaper at the back. And I'm just like, oh, ako rin. Like I would want to have one, and my mom would be like, no, just change clothes, like you're drenched in sweat, and like you don't need to do that. I'm like, but I want the one with the newspaper like every other kids. So games, there's a lot. I grew up with no electronics yet. Like we were one of the only one who had PlayStation, and that would mean that because we were the only one who had PlayStation, then everyone in the subdivision plays it's the same PlayStation. So I need to have my own turn to play with our own PlayStation. And already we're 4 kids. So like, I need to have my own turn versus I need to have my own like term to like play it with other people too. So that was, I had a very rich neighbor childhood. The front of our houses was a vacant lot. So like we do a little bit of gardening. I do like my little cooking thing with like the candle. I do that, but there's a lot of games that I grew up with. My parents like really provided me with things that I wanted to have, like a tree house that I see from the movies, from like the American like side. So my dad built me like the swing set, and then she's like, oh, find a tarp, and he put a tarp over, and he helped me put a tarp over. He bought some plank of wood so that like I can have my own like tree house, but it's not tree house, it was just like on the skeleton of the swing. So that was great. I don't have a specific child like games when I was a child. I had lots of games.
I love that. And you just reminded me also, so I have a neighbor, it's still the neighbor because I still live in I live in my childhood house now. We were two Filipino families living in a semi-detached, and we didn't have a tree to have a tree house, but like we built like under our balconies, we created like this office home space where we would like go, and we had like a tarp, and we would bring stuff out, like the sense of like just wanting to be in the tree house. You know, we fantasized about having that fancy tree house that you saw in movies. so relate to that, and also relating to like you were saying, the shared PlayStation. So I grew up in the 80s and we didn't have cable, so back then there was like, you know, the antenna, and we had two channels. We had channel CTV and CBC, and then one French channel, but I never watched the French channel. And like,
and the weather channel,
maybe. I don't even think we had it back then. Like it was very, very, very limited. So it was like, that was all I was watching. And then when I would get the invite from the neighbors who had cable, we would watch cable. I would be able to watch like all of the shows on cable. So just thank you for letting me reminisce about my childhood. Laura, what were your games?
That's so nice. You guys are making me realize how young I am. Like, all I could think of was games that were on the computer. My two games that I have in mind that I really enjoyed growing up was one, Roller Coaster Tycoon, which is like it's a game where you build your own roller coaster and you manage your own it's like La Ronde or your own amusement park. I would have enjoyed going out more, but the games that I have in mind are games that are online, and it came in like a CD that you had to put in your computer. And it was the funnest time. But at the game I loved the most growing up was called Candyland. It was also on the computer.
I know that game. I know that game. Never played it though, but I saw so many other people getting. They're like, I can't stop playing Candyland. I'm like, why? I don't understand.
I don't even remember what it was like. I just have like vivid dreams about it.
And per context, Laura was born here.
Yes, I was born in Montreal. I was born in '98.
We're not dropping the years that we, Des and I, were not dropping the years we were born.
No, but we could just say, I mean, it's safe to say that there are different generations on this call alone. That's safe to say, yes. Oh, well, I love that. I love how we're, you know, all from different generations, all, you know, born here, not born here, and all Filipino enough. Filipinas enough. Yes. So excited for you to tune in to the rest of the show and for our interview with Eric Tiggs.
Stay tuned.
The first song we're going to play you of this episode is called Lunod by Ben and Ben, Juan Carlos, and Zild.
We hope you enjoyed this episode's musical break. That was Mundo by Four of Spades.
Magandang hapon. Welcome back, everyone. Nakikinig po kayo sa Radio Kapwa CKUT 90.3 FM. We're so happy to have you, and we are so happy to have a very special guest with us today. His name is Eric Tigley. He's an amazing artist, teacher, and storyteller, and wonderful Kapwa. I was blessed to meet in 2019. Tiggs, welcome, and the floor is yours. Please introduce yourself.
What's good? Thank you for having me. I just want to say what's up to everybody that's out there. And yeah, I'm really happy to be here. It's a good thing. I love sharing energy.
It definitely is. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, about your background? I know that you do a lot of things and you wear many hats and you're an amazing community kuya, community tito. So, show off a bit. Tell us about yourself.
Well, that's a lot there. I don't know if I can live up to that, friends.
I'm being humble, and I'm gonna call you out on it. This is a time to celebrate you and all the amazing things you do.
I don't know if Jenny Austria, I don't know if you know her. She's another member here in the Toronto community. She always catches me on that too, because she'll know I hate talking about myself. So if you're there,
yes, Jenny, thank now. You.
She's we trying love to get that. Me. Yeah, she's really trying to get me to do that more often. I'm a teacher here in Toronto. I teach middle school. Used to teach high school for 10 years. Now I really focus on the elementary school levels. I keep going down just because I keep seeing certain trends that keep happening. We'll get to talk about that afterwards. I'm a showing artist, battling artist. So I battled a couple of times, do a lot of marked art battles, custom shoes, things of that sort. Undefeated there, though every time I've lost, they've thrown it out the window. So I'll always take it. Yeah, do graph, urban art, showing. I used to do a lot of, before I was teaching, I was doing animation, graphic design. That's what I went to school for. And then when I started working more in the community, like I'm from Jane and Finch, it always shows up in my art. Like I'm from this specific area in Toronto, very multicultural, very, has a reputation that precedes itself. So that's why I always have to talk about it. But in that community, that's where I got my first job doing community work at the Driftwood Community Center. And then from there, it kind of snowballed and I wanted to get out of a studio space and then get into a classroom or just start working more with kids. And then, so that kind of led to where I am right now. So still teaching, but then I started doing a lot of projects in the community with kids telling their own stories. So first it was them. I really wanted them to start making their own cartoons and animations. But it's super long to do that. And, you know, it's like 12 to 20 frames per second that a kid has to draw. Yeah, they don't have the patience for that. So we started moving on to like graphic novels, you know, storybooks, children's storybooks. And then, so I started focusing more on that, you know, doing more pencil to paper as opposed to, you know, a tablet to, you know, animations on YouTube. But we'll still do that though. I mean, if it comes up, I definitely do that still. And then, work in the community. I mean, France, I met you at Panay Power, right? 2019 through,
yes.
You know, that there, because I'm really close friends with Monica. You guys know Monica, right? We shared a wall because we used to teach at the same alternative school. It was a school called Linden. Love it. Sad that I had to leave, but there was one wall that we shared. She did computers and business, and I taught visual arts there. And then, from there, I was always part of like every, sorry, can I swear on here? I was right about to swear. Yeah,
totally can swear.
And I was like dead ass serious then. Again, that's such a calm word, but every iteration of a Filipino group I've stepped into one way or another. Like in Toronto, it's whether it was a university group, like FSAT, FSA, FAT, not really FCAR. I was only there for like a second, but then associations with my parents and then the Filipino basketball leagues. And then, like Ugnayan, I still have, you know, ties with, Anakbayan, a bunch of people. I got, you know, recruited for Ugnayan in Vancouver. So it's like, again, Montreal has been like the space I haven't really dabbled in, but still I've like walked through a lot of different paths, like in a lot of different groups, but that's it. I think that's it in a nutshell. That's it, right?
Yeah,
I can go now.
I think that's a lot. I think it's inevitable for Filipino professionals to kind of wear many hats, especially when we kind of have these values of social justice, of community work, of decolonization, right? I think that comes with the piece of when we say that like women and people of color have to do like twice, three times, four times as much than everyone else. And that's literally what it is. It's like we all kind of have our 9 to 5 and we try to find a 9 to 5 that doesn't suck our soul, right? Because on top of that, after the 9 to 5, we need to go in and we need to be doing the community work because no one's really stepping into it, right?
Definitely.
So I totally feel you on wearing the many hats. And I think this is like the perfect place for our first question, which is how does basically art and social change intersect in your work? I know that you've talked about it a little bit, but if you want to elaborate a little bit more. And I just wanted to make a point that I'm actually one of the lucky people who has the very few pairs of shoes that you did.
Oh, yeah.
So I have an awesome pair of sneakers that was custom designed by Tiggs. And there's basically like Gabriela Silang on it and like a whole bunch of amazing art. And then like Maki Baka Wag Matakot and graffiti really big. And they're just so amazing that I like don't want to wear. I've never worn them and I don't want to wear them because they're just so beautiful. So thank you so much for that pair. And yeah, would love to hear more about how all of this intersects.
Well, thank you for, I remember because you bought, you did the raffle. It was the raffle that we did, right?
Yeah, basically I had a community event and I was like, we need copies of Hoy. And you were like, oh my gosh, I need to find a printer. And I was like, better find one fast. We have an event. We made it happen. But I didn't realize that buying your thing in bulk was going to put my name in a raffle multiple times.
Yeah, number times. Well, that's dope, though. The reason why I bring that up is because now you have to breakdance in those shoes because they're not running shoes. They're from Toronto, amazing world-renowned b-boy Dizzy Carlalba, who's now in Taiwan right now. And like that's his brand. That was important for me to, especially with that raffle. It's the only, I don't want to be biased, but again, it's Hoy. I didn't want to just shoot up Nikes or Reeboks. The closest thing they'll get to our culture is like having a factory make them. But you know, I wanted to get an exact like brand that was Filipino. And you know, we want to support the arts too. He's a dope b-boy. He's done a lot for the community. So
absolutely. I mean, that's what we try to do, right? Like lift while we climb, support each other. So
I'm
actually really, really happy when I found out that Dizzy was Filipino. And I guess I'm going to need to take some breakdancing classes because I definitely don't know, even have the basics.
Well, those shoes will help you for sure.
Are they like magical shoes that I'm going to put on and then know how to breakdance?
I think, yes, they are. Okay. And you have to try it for the first time at a club. I think don't even practice. Just put them on. Don't wear them to the club. Just slip them on and then dance and you'll see the difference.
Sounds good. And we'll make sure that we film this.
But sorry to get off topic, just to answer your question about for me and art and social change intersecting, it will, in all honesty, because I did animation and graphic design first, and really it's a pay to order system in terms of art. You know, like you're not really, you have this direct message that you have to get across, and there isn't really much in-depth like feeling or emotion to it other than manipulating the viewer. Like if I have a Coke, I want to make sure somebody buys that Coke. So I'm going to design something in order to manipulate them to buy that Coke. And that type of art for, you know, not the same type of social change that, you know, the type of work that I assume that we all like to do. It's similar, but then very same time, extremely different because, you know, we're using art to tell stories. We're just, you know, manipulating the story and the outcome at the exact same time, which isn't that much different. But what I like to do is, you know, I was from an area, again, I'm going to bring this up a ton of times, but it's really my foundation. You know, the only time I really got to see art was when I would go to like a Becker's. I don't know if you guys have that. You're all in Montreal, right? Is Becker's in Montreal?
No Becker's.
It's like a variety store.
Okay.
A local chain. It was big because they had their own milk. They had like Becker's milk. But, you know, there was the only place I could find pictures, like picture books or cartoons. It was either like watching on television, but then we had like strict laws on, you know, when and which television we could watch. But then when you go to a variety store, because, you know, I don't know if this is a secret, but my parents like to play lotto.
Like most Filipino parents.
Then I would get to hang out by the magazines, you know, while they go through their magic numbers of what's going to work. And then I, you know, got to look at comics, look at Archie's and things of that sort. So, you know, I was extremely drawn to the idea of a visual representation of stories. And then fast forward to doing it for a living, it was just corny when I was doing it as a graphic designer. And I'm not hating on any graphic designers that are out there. But, you know, I used to work for a marketing company that did, wait, I know you guys have St. Hubert's there, right? So I was going to make another Toronto stumble because we have Swiss Chalet, you know, and we don't have St. Hubert's. But I used to work for a company that did all their, you know, fruits and vegetables and things of that sort. So I had to just like airbrush tomatoes all day and like throw them up on a flyer. And it was just, you know, the idea is like, I'm making this tomato even more beautiful for you to buy it. This seems corny to me. So
I'm like, that, poor tomato.
Yeah, well, it's all fake, right?
But can we honor the tomato in its natural beauty as an act wish, of colonization?
That's the thing, right? When you contribute to, it's so strange, right? Because you're making this fake world of consumerism. And at the same time, you know, it's not going to look like that. There hasn't been one Big Mac that I've bought that looked like the picture. And if it did, I wouldn't trust it. But at the same time, that being a job and using it as an objective, it just didn't really gel with me. It didn't have the right energy or the right frequency for me. But then when I started doing it more, when I started teaching more, this sounds like strange, like art for art's sake, it is always like a debated topic, especially when I was in university. You know, are you just making art for the sake of making art? And for some people, it is just, you know, just a way of breathing, you know, just to put it out there. So when I started doing it more within the community, my own community in Jane and Finch, because again, I had lack of resources. So I knew that everybody else is going to have a lack of resources too. There's like barely anybody from my community that leaves it or goes to an art gallery. You know, the closest thing we'll get, again, is the images that we see in packaging, in comic books on the stand, or now in the library, but our library in our community's been in renovation for like 2 years. So it just became important that, you know, if we can't find our stories or can't find our own visual images, then we should just start making it ourselves. And then the only thing that sucks is I had to leave high school to do that. Like I had to go to a whole other community to do that. And then now I do majority of my stuff here. You know, whenever I do, I used to do a lot of live painting in Jane and Finch, but now because of the construction, like right now we're going through a huge gentrification. So there's an LRT that's running through it right now. So when I'm talking, like buildings are being torn down, roads are being uprooted, people are just being displaced. It sucks, you know, but it makes even like our story that much more important. Because then we'll all be, you know, gone. And then it'll be totally different by the time people move in and then, you know, totally change the area. So I don't know if that really answers your question.
No, it totally does. It actually segues right perfectly into that Des has for you, because I think in our culture, we're very much told, like, especially if you want to study art or if you want to study something outside of nursing or outside of traditional things, you always get that question of like, anong gagawin mo dyan? Like, what are you going to do with that? Yeah. What are you going to do with that? Are you going to find a job and get paid, right? Like, I did my undergrad in feminist studies, and you can imagine my family being like, anong gagawin mo dyan? You know, like, what the hell are you going to do? But then it's because they had never seen anything different. And when they saw that I started working for like nonprofit organizations and working for women's organizations, they were like, oh, okay, we kind of get it. But again, when you haven't seen it and when you come from a place of scarcity, that's kind of what ends up happening. So I'm actually going to pass the mic to Des because she definitely has a question that links perfectly to where we were going.
Yeah, thank you, Eric, for all of that. Wow, that's just like, there's so many points that are coming up, but just like on scarcity, you know, as Filipinos, you know, like with this upbringing of scarcity and this must provide for family mentality, you know, like right away, what are the challenges you experienced as an illustrator, designer, fine artist, an educator?
Definitely, I would say, I mean, what Francis mentioned right now in terms of having like permission or approval, it was very different for me because I'm the youngest of three children. My brother is pretty much 10 years older than me. He went to university, went to the computer science. Then my sister, who I love, shout out to her, you know, frontline workers, is a nurse. So when France mentioned, like, you know, are you going to become a nurse? She's a nurse. And then for me, I'm the youngest. So right away, like off the bat, leaving elementary school to high school, I like wrote my own application. I went out and looked for a school that I could go to learn art. And my sister-in-law's brother already went there, and he was in another neighborhood called Rexdale, which is another like an urban area of Toronto. And then the fact that he went there allowed me to go there. And then like my mom, I remember like they just worked a lot, right? I mean, I remember them taking me to like some like intro, but for the most part, like filling out your application, going to the auditions was always my sister or myself that would just do it ourselves. So in terms of approval from my family, they were just working all the time. They're just like, okay, you're the youngest. We already got two successful people. Do you?
Yeah, exactly. It's like okay, we have the two siblings. The third one, you're like, okay, good. Like my sister actually got married first and she had the big wedding. So when it came down to me, they were like, do whatever you want, right? Because the box in their head or the safety or security is kind of checked. So then the next in line is, you know, they're like, go ahead and be free, right? So interesting.
Oh, for sure. And it's it's a brother and a sister, right? They're both married with kids. So now I can throw that back on them because they're always like, when are you going to get married and have kids? And I'm like, you got yours already. Just let me just draw here in the corner. It's all good. But in terms of my family approval, they just would let me do it. And plus I was always doing it. I mean, they knew I had that bug from such an early age. I mean, the first story they tell me, I was like four and my dad used to be a mechanic. And I was hanging on top of the hood of a car that he was fixing. It wasn't our car. And I picked up a screwdriver and drew Batman on the hood. You know, and I was, you know, four. I was sitting on the hood. Like, just imagine a tiny person doing that. Or we had a piano. And there was the same Batman was drawn on the piano with I would just find sharp things and, like, draw on things.
I just hear a lot of hello.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
In the background.
But I love how Spirit was coming through you so young, right? Spirit was just like, nope, flat surface, pointy object. Let me come through you. Like, I'm coming through you. But yeah, the hello, big time.
Yeah, I was like, Batman should be here, right? Batman should be on this piano. Yeah, he should. And draw Batman on there. But I wish they funneled it a bit better. That's the only thing. I think they didn't put me in any classes or anything like that. I would always try to find like the back of, there's a ton of backs of, I was always looking for a blank sheet of paper, if that makes sense, like figuratively and literally. So you'll find all these books, like my mom's cookbook, and then there's a blank sheet of paper. So there's a whole bunch of drawings on it. And I couldn't draw it on line paper because it has lines on it. But that's the thing. Like, I wish somebody bought a sketchbook for me sooner. It wasn't until I was going to that school, into the art high school, that I got a sketchbook. And, you know, it's just really just blank sheets of paper, right? But it just was scarce at that time, you know, in like the late 80s, 90s. So the thing about it was just for them, they're okay with it. They still kind of don't get it, but they're supportive. But really my necessity of creating came out of the fact that I wasn't being provided with anything. So they're cool with it. Again, I'm the youngest, so I can get away with a bit more, which is unfair. Don't get me wrong, I understand my
Thank
privilege.
Thank you for naming that, because I have ate trauma. Thank you.
Yeah, no,
like, a lot of ates and kuyas have ate kuya trauma, and we're all like, ugh, fucking bunsos. But like, let's name that, but also there's some really bunsos out there. Dez, I know you're a bunso. I love you.
I was about to say, I know you love me.
Ooh, Veronica speaking. I am actually the ate. I have two big brothers, but I'm the first ate. So like the responsibility of being like the panganay ate is on me. But there's a lot of like that pressure on me. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that like hearing your stories and being able to make yourself feel fulfilled with your art is great. One of the things that I wrote in my little post-it was when you were speaking was, art sustains us when survivability is uncertain, right? And that's something that we always, when now we're in the colonizing process, it's mm-hmm. the arts that we want to be in touch with who we are, and our means and our medium would be the art itself. So that's me segueing to my question to you.
Okay.
Behind me is your art that was gifted to me by friends. But actually, I came upon your art before I knew about you, which was Akdaan.
Oh yeah.
When I was looking at your prints, I'm like, that looks so familiar. And I have the actual book with it. So that was
Where did you get
great.
From? Sorry.
From Migrante Canada.
Did you order it online with them or did they
I got it from it? Tito Tony.
Oh, okay, cool. Migrant, another group that I dabble with.
Yes, this was during my Anakbayan days. So I was like, we were selling this and such. So I'm like, I want one because it was like panitikan. So a lot of like Tagalog short stories, and then there's English ones, and then it intersects a lot with our realities and our experiences in here. And then I stumbled on your hoy. I'm like, what is this? And Matilda and I, my partner who's white, was started looking at it, and I'm like, this is really great. I was already studying the Baybay and how to write the Baybay, and I'm like, oh no, I can kind of read it. So it was like a great primer, and I'm like 27 years old, and I'm like, I was having fun with this, like I could just color it. And then so my question to you would be that, what was the motivation behind the book?
Oh my God, I think I'm gonna get in trouble for this. It's part sad and part funny. So I put out a book before Hoy called Round Brown Blues, and it's a picture children's book. Very end, there was like a choose your own adventure. You get to decide what happens to the bad shapes that are in it. And it wasn't the first book. The first book I wanted to do was Hoy. But then I was told that nobody's gonna want the Filipino activity book. So I was like, okay, you know, if I'm going to bring these to a bunch of publishers, that I should go with like something that was more palatable, you know, like the same thing people always say, you know, like, we'll never hire X, Y, and Z because it doesn't apply to X, Y, and Z's palette for consumption. So that was a bad choice, but at least gave me some insight on how to create a book beforehand. I was able to like show the book to my students at Linden. They actually helped me like write it, and then from there it gave me enough like moxie to like go and shop it. Got denied by a bunch of publishers, and then it just brought me back to like the foundation of Hoy. Like why am I putting this aside just to please all these other people when I had this directive at the beginning? I know that was like a weird intro, but the reason why I wanted to create Hoy is because, and this is where I'm trying to might get in trouble for this, but and not bad trouble, but it's just, we all know, again, I got to stop assuming that everybody's in Toronto. So my bad. That's but there's this place called the Bathurst Strip. It runs the whole length of the city from the top of the city to the bottom of the city. And in the Bathurst Strip, everybody knows that's where the Filipinos are. And that's also where the Jewish community is. So we know, you know, through migration that a huge influx of LCP came in, you know, from the 80s, the 90s till now, and majority of them live on the Bathurst Strip. Now, because of, you know, the fact that, you know, my family had the privilege of coming here in like the 70s and 80s, you know, a lot of my cousins were able to not necessarily, well, they just matter of factly, they came, got married here, had kids here, and then they lived on the Bathurst Strip, but not as part of that demographic of nannies that came in, but came in as like first gen, like Canadian Filipinos or second gen Filipino Canadians, depending on, you know, what source we're gonna cite. So my niece went to a school or daycare with a bunch of Jewish kids. And she came home one day and said, "Mom, I'm Jewish, right?" And then my cousin said, no, you're Filipino. And she said, "What's a Filipino?" And when I heard that story, I was like, okay, there's a problem right now, because this has gone past, you know, what she sees in the mirror to just how she assimilates to the people that are around her. And I was like, okay, well, we got to have some sort of a an intro course. But that's what I thought was always lacking, because anytime you have something, I mean, I'm not gonna say for everybody, but majority of the types of classes that we have here are mostly language based, as opposed to just an overall culture based story. And it was difficult because, you know, we already had a pre-notion of what everybody was like on the Bathurst Strip, and people were fine with it because it didn't really, you know, affect their status quo. But as soon as it started affecting the next generation, even some people still don't think that that's a problem. When I was a kid, I was never told I was Filipino. You know, I was Bisayan before Filipino. Like, we still did Sinulog. You know, we still do that today. There's still Sinulog that's in the area in Rexdale at St. Andrews. And, you know, it's like our story began just when, like, Magellan hits. And I was like, no, like, this, it can't start here, one. And then two, we can't just keep promoting this and saying it's just this. And then three, I'm like, why are you only telling me I'm Bisayan? So this became this whole divisive tool.
And folks don't realize that Sinulog is actually indigenous, right? It's like, oh, they're parading the Santo Nino everywhere and celebrating the Santo Nino, but look at all the people in animal costumes and things like that. It really honors our pre-colonial indigenous spirituality, which was animistic, right? And honored nature. So I love that you guys still celebrate Sinulog.
I find it hilarious. Sorry, I have like a massive smile on my face right now. I wish you could see it. Because when you sit there and you do it and you watch, you're like, I don't think Jesus ever did this. Maybe he did, but I don't think the Pope would approve of this. Like, this is like colonialism at its best, you know, where they translate something that already exists and then like reuse it just for their own means. And then like, I get it. Like, we're in a Catholic church doing this. Like, I teach at a Catholic school and I get the idea of pomp and circumstances and like why somebody's doing to get their objective done. But yeah, just looking at it as its own like specific details of the two-step, the drum beat, the way we're carrying the Santo Niño forward, the dress, it's like, yo, this isn't Christian. Come on now.
No.
But yeah, it was just a mix of all that. Like, being brought up as a Bisayan first, a Filipino second. Like, I wasn't told I was Filipino until I went to high school and somebody that was Tagalog came and talked to me in Tagalog. And then they're like, when I met their parents, like, oh, you're not Filipino, you're Indian. Like, I got that a lot growing up. I still get that a lot to this day. But it was just that. It's just like, okay, we're making these divisions of what we know is this and that, but we have no basis or reference for these kids to figure that out too. And then, sorry, I'll close it up. The last thing is, as a teacher, we have no resources. I mean, I was teaching at a school, SPB, Steeles and Bathurst, in between Bathurst and Young, and they're like 700 kids, 80 to 90% Filipino, zero resources. And I knew with my background, I could just make it, you know, like, this is my expertise. So I was like, if nobody's going to do it, then I'm going to do it. And who cares about what everybody says? Because I've gotten so much flack from the community, like, from, I'm not going to say exactly who. I've been told to change the title from like official government officials. I've been going to different communities telling me like, who are you to do this? Speak to me in your specific language. What tribe are you from? Like, all these things that are like putting obstacles before actually like seeing what the purpose of it is. Because at the very end, I don't know if you read at the end, it's just like, this isn't the be all. There's like literally a cartoon version of me saying, this is not the be all and end all of our history and our culture. Go find it. Like, go look for it for yourself. And like, I already just got proven wrong. You know, I'm really sorry, because I know, Veronica, you're doing the Babayan script. But Christian Kabuy contacted me and he was like, there's some icons you're going to have to switch. So I made sure that I switched them after. So I apologize if you've been practicing, the E is actually the O and the O is actually the E. I'll put that out there now.
But I think that's also comes with the practice of decolonization, right? Because we are relearning these things. So some things are unclear, and then, like, all my respect to Christian Kabuy, but then are we creating a hierarchy of who has the authority to be like, this is the way and this is the actual right way, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
Like, he does wonderful work.
Yeah.
But again, like, where did we decide if we are decolonizing and looking at it from a non-hierarchical space, like, who decides how we're perpetuating the culture now and like what this should look like, you know? Because again, we're not a monolith, and Baibayin was probably not written the same way in all the 7,000 islands, right? So there's also those nuances of our pre-colonial culture was not a monolith either. But I mean, I feel like we could go on and on and on. I think Vero has like one last little question to ask you, which we ask everyone as we're wrapping it up. So I will pass it to her.
Yeah, I mean, you already talked about the ways where you weren't told that you're not Filipino enough and asked to like change your work here and there, which, by the way, this reminds me so much. I'm pointing at the book behind me. Reminds me of my childhood because I was born in the Philippines. I'm like, oh, this is what we do in our free time, you know, coloring stuff and then like learning little histories here and there. So I appreciate it. So what other people say, F it. Stay true to ourselves, and this is our story. You don't get to dictate it. But my question to you would be that to end, and we ask this to everyone else, like Fran said, what does Kapwa mean to you?
Wow, that's a deep question, you know, because it has a lot to do with ourselves and has a lot to do with others and then being together, you know, and it's I've been like dealing with something like this a lot with the idea of family, but, you know, a Filipino family isn't necessarily the most fluid and smooth thing in the world, but it's also something that we have to be aware of, that, you know, for every river that runs, there's going to be waves in an ocean that, you know, stumbles and crashes and, you know, can be hurtful too. So for me, Kapwa is really endurance, is it's really accepting an endurance of who's around us and how we can do these things together. And sorry, just to go back on that last point, like with Christian Kaboy's in input, yeah, like I totally get that, like, there really isn't Hari we can actually go to right now, but it's the idea of Kapwa too, like we're so much bigger than our community that's here, that I'm always willing to listen to every other source of inspiration and information too at the exact same time, because that's the only way we can endure, you know, if we are actually working with each other and mixing in that way.
And continuing the conversation, right? Yeah. Like, that's what it's about. It's not like who decides what. It's like, let's continue the conversation.
Yeah.
And I also think Dez's daughter wants to continue the conversation with you.
Yeah, so Eric, thank you for all of this. And I really, really hope you come back to continue this conversation. I feel like that's not enough time. It definitely wasn't enough time. But I have an 8-year-old daughter. And right before getting on this call, I said, oh, I'm interviewing the person that created this book. Do you want me to ask him any questions, or do you have any comments that you want me to share with him? And she looked at the book and she said, tell him thank you, because I love to look at the book with Lala. She calls my mom Lala. And just for content, like, she's 8, my mom is 81, I'm 43, and all three generations are like have learned so much from this book. But specifically, my daughter said, tell him, like, I love looking at this book with Lala, because, and a lot of these things were also Bisaya. She's like, no, that's not the Bisaya. But then she sees it, you know, like the tattoo, the tattoos, like the Visayans were like covered in tattoos. And she's like, no, that's not true. And it makes me honor like her Catholicism and like how like history stopped at one point. And I honor that and I respect that. But again, she's relearning or unpacking, or there's just so many beautiful things happening with her granddaughter. So I just wanted to thank you. And my daughter wanted to thank you too, because there's special moments that she shares with my mom. So thank you for that. And I hope you continue to share this. Like, I really want to give this to all of the kids in my life. And even adults, like, I think this needs to be like a staple of something for our community again. And I love how, like, you know, you're getting the feedback and they're like, no, switch it. It's like, we're all learning, as you said, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's amazing. And
thank you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks
for coming.
Thank you for coming. Come back.
Yeah. Whenever you want, invite me. This is fun.
Love it.
All right. Yay. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for your time. We enjoyed it, and we'll definitely have you back.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Eric Tigley. We will for sure have you again. There is too much to talk about. Now upcoming is the weekly news from the Philippines by John Marvin. Take it away.
Magandang hapon sa inyong lahat. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is John Marvin. I am a youth leader and a community organizer here bringing you important news back home in the Philippines. The article I'll be sharing with you is from Reuters with a title, Cleanup Day Comes to the Philippine Capital's Polluted Bay. Hundreds of volunteers joined a mass cleanup drive along the coast of the polluted Manila Bay in the Philippine capital to mark International Coastal Cleanup Day on Saturday. Volunteers and government workers, including hundreds of Coast Guard personnel, collected sachets, rubber sleepers, and other non-biodegradable bin washed in Manila Bay, a 60-kilometer or 37-mile semi-enclosed estuary facing the South China Sea. This initiative will help make our coastal area in Manila Bay better so that our tourists and visitors will see the beauty of the bay, college student Kendrick Lopez, 18, told Reuters during the cleanup drive. Waters along the Manila Bay, famous for its idyllic sunsets, are heavily polluted by oil, grease, and trash from nearby residential areas and ports. The Philippines is rich in marine resources, with nearly 36,300 kilometers or 22,255 miles of coastline in the archipelago of more than 7,600 islands. But it is the world's top polluter when it comes to releasing plastic waste into the ocean, according to roughly a third of the total, according to April 22 report by University of Oxford's Our World in Data, a scientific online publication. We need to do this, clean up drives for our environment, and to discourage people from throwing trash on the seaside, Janet Panganiban, a 36-year-old volunteer, told Reuters. Critics say laws regulating solid waste are inadequate and poorly enforced, leaving governments and communities struggling to address the pollution crisis. The International Coastal Cleanup Day is held every third Sunday of September to raise awareness of the growing garbage problems affecting coastlines around the world. The article is written by Jay Ereno and Peter Biaza on September 17, 2022. Thank you so much for listening. Maraming salamat sa pakikinig. Once again, this is John Marvin Reyes bringing you Philippine news from abroad.
So we've reached the end of our episode. Now it's time for community announcements. The Concordia Student Union is offering another learning opportunity open to undergraduate students and entirely free. Upon completion, students will earn a Concordia Student Union certificate in community organizing. Get Radical is a semester-long workshop series about building social movements from the ground up. With 10 dynamic sessions, to provide you with a range of practical skills from branding your campaigns to honing your artivism skills, all with the goal of fostering meaningful engagement with pertinent socio-political issues within our communities. Register by September 21st. Up next, Maria Ressa will be speaking at the 2022 BD Lecture Series on October 20th. Tickets are on sale right now. Next up, the Bahai Collective will be hosting the Marché Asiatique Space this weekend from September 22nd to 25th. Centre Kappa will be tabling on the Sunday. And last but not least, Friday, September 23rd is a night for the Inuit Nunangat. Meet and learn from influential Inuit leaders Naomi Taddy and Isabel Chapado about the realities of life in Nunavut, the crisis of TB, and how you can support them. For more information, consult the Sea Change Initiative networks.
Once again, this has been Laura from Hiraya Productions. Mabuhay.
Liberation for one is liberation for all. Tuloy ang laban.
Pop Montreal International Music Festival is back from September 28th to October 2nd, 2022. 5 days of music and over 200 artists, including teen punk viral sensations The Linda Lindas, Canada's first drag race winner Priyanka, 70s British funk group Simone, Grammy-nominated and Juno Award winner Alison Russell, iconic dancehall queen Sister Nancy, post-rock legends Tortoise, and many more. The festival also features film screenings, visual art, symposium discussions, and as always, many surprises. Get your tickets and passes now at popmontreal.com. A CKUT co-presentation.
From helmets to sunscreen, we do everything we can to keep our kids safe. So how can the COVID-19 vaccine help protect them? COVID-19 vaccines can help keep children safe from severe illness and potential long-term effects of the virus. Millions of children in Canada and around the world have already been safely vaccinated. Help protect your child. Book their appointment at canada.ca/COVID-vaccine. A message from the Government of Canada.
Pop Montreal International Music Festival is back from September 28th to October 2nd, 2022. 5 days of music and over 200 artists, including teen punk viral sensations, the Linda Lindas, Canada's first drag race winner Priyanka, 70s British funk group Simone, Grammy-nominated and Juno Award winner Alison Russell, iconic dancehall queen Sister Nancy, post-rock legends Tortoise, and many more. The festival also features film screenings, visual art, symposium discussions, and as always, many surprises. Get your tickets and passes now at popmontreal.com. A CKUT co-presentation.